the hashtag STRAskPodcast, and Greg Kokel and I thank you for joining us. I'm Amy Hall.
I got top billing that time. That's the first time I've heard that. Thank you.
Let's get right into this. Here's a question from Jonathan Wood. Can bad behavior by Christians excuse unbelief of their peers? If LGBT folk are hurt by ungentle Christians, will they be judged differently?
I don't see why. There are all kinds of circumstances by which we are influenced in some way or another. I get no indication that that's the case. The judgment is qualified, it seems. When you look at the text, the judgment is qualified by the nature of the deeds done. In this Revelations 20, the books are open. I call them the books of death in the story of reality. Text doesn't call them that, but it does contrast them to the book of life. And the consequence of the contents of the books is death, eternal death. That is, the deeds people have done, the misdeeds, and they are being held accountable. So there is a genuine scene of justice playing out there. And I think part of the reason is that many people think that they're good enough. And when they actually see the record, they will have a totally different point of view. The other indication about the nature of the judgment has to do with Revelation. And the indication seems to be, particularly with some things that Jesus says in the Gospels, that that if a person receives more revelation of the truth, their rejection of that truth is more culpable. So here is Jesus, the incarnate Son of God, appearing at Capernaum. And the people working miracles and teaching, and people reject him. And he said, your judgment will be greater than the judgment of Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay? When he's before Pilate, he says that the one who delivered you over to me has the greater sin. And that's probably the chief priest that Jesus has in mind there. So there is a gradation of sin, and there's greater punishment for greater sins, and there's a greater punishment for the rejection of greater revelation. Those are the two factors. Now, I don't at all mean to suggest that there's no consequence to our behaviors towards others. And if Christians are not virtuous towards other people and that sets them against the gospel, that is a sin committed by Christians. But it doesn't exonerate the non-Christian, because the non-Christian is just as guilty. And keep in mind, if they're pointing their finger at the Christian for being nasty to them, the fact is they're nasty to a lot of people too. And I'm not saying gays are nasty. I'm saying human beings are nasty. And they are going to be held accountable for that. And what's being offered by the Christian in general is a free gift of salvation. And they're rejecting it. They're not rejecting it, in my view, because they have been mistreated. They're rejecting it because they want to live their own life. They want to make the choices for themselves about their own life. They want to be in control. They want to be autonomous. They, simply put, they don't want to bend the knee. And that's what they'll be held responsible for. It may make them feel better in their rejection. Oh, the church is filled with hypocrites. So that makes a rejector feel more confident in the legitimacy of his rejection. But when you think about it, the fact that there's hypocrites in the church is irrelevant to the truth of Christianity. And by the way, that's where the church is filled with worse than hypocrites. All kinds of nasty people are in the church because that's where they belong. In God's care, forgiven, and being made better. That's the idea of being in the church. So you may differ with me on this one, but I don't think that that is going to make a difference in the judgment.
No, yeah, Greg.
They are without excuse, is what Paul says multiple times in Romans 1. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree with the points that you have made here. And I also want to say that, I mean, I'm sure there are Christians who are I don't know how he defines ungentle, but I'm sure there are Christians like that. But I also think whenever Christians speak the truth about something as difficult to hear as sexual morality, people take that badly no matter how you do it, no matter how you say it. I mean, think about John the Baptist. How did he end up in jail?
Yeah, that's right. Right.
He said, you are not allowed to have your brother's wife. And that's it. He's in jail because nobody wants to hear that they are sinning. The same thing happens in the Sodom and Gomorrah story where Lot says, do not do this wicked thing. And they say, you're a judge over us? We're going to treat you worse than them. And so,
which is a reflection of a common remark nowadays. Refrain. Are you judging us? Who are you?
Yeah. Right. So I think Christians are going to be perceived as being hurtful no matter how they speak the truth about sexual morality. Mm-hmm. So that is not an excuse for them. That's just revealing the sin in their own life.
Right.
So when you call out sin for someone who's not repentant, that is only going to make them angrier. And so that's not going to lessen their judgment. That's evidence of their judgment.
Yeah, they're going to be angry and feel abused. And in fact, nowadays, to do something like that, to identify sexual sin as sin, is understood as an act of injustice and oppression. And I mentioned, I think, in a previous show that something about critical race theory or critical theory, and this kind of reaction is part of that worldview that we'll be assessing coming up next year. But this is the environment we're in. If you say what I'm doing is wrong, then you are oppressing me. Now, of course, they say we do all kinds of things wrong, and it's not considered oppression. So that's just a one-way street, just like tolerance.
Yeah, and so I mentioned John the Baptist because I'm afraid when I read a question like this that people will think that they'll be afraid to speak the truth about this because they don't want to interfere with God saving someone. Although I guess if they upset someone, then they'll be judged differently. Then I guess that's better for them. I don't know, but you can't control how people are going to respond. But if you never tell people the truth about sin, they will not know their need to repent. And that is their only way out of this.
Right.
That is their only way to God is repentance. And this isn't just LGBT people. Mm-hmm. This is everyone. This is everybody. If you deny that they're sinning, then they have no reason to have Christ.
Right. And think so of Jesus. Bad. Jesus comments in the Sermon on the Mount where he said, a city set on the hill is a light. And then he makes reference to if a shade is put over your light is covered, you know, what good is that? Well, what does the light do? A light shines on darkness. It reveals what is hidden in darkness. This reminds me of something Paul said, do not participate in the evil deeds of darkness, but even expose them. So there are different ways to do that, some more politic than others, but even so, this is part of our responsibility as Christians is to call sin, sin, and bad, bad, and good, good, especially when the culture has got that equation upside down.
So this leads us to the next question from John Michael Workington. How to respond when it's said that religion is dangerous because it creates guilt and shame, and that one just has to forgive oneself to feel better?
Okay, well, this is exactly what we were just talking about. If your claims about what is true make me feel bad, then your claims are bad. You're doing something wrong. You're making me feel shameful, or you're trying to put shame on me. Sometimes, we all do things we should be ashamed of. And if you are not ashamed of some of your behaviors, then you have no conscience, okay? And to try to rid yourself of all feelings of shame are simply attempts to rid yourself of conscience, okay? Now, I understand people don't want to feel bad, but they ought to feel bad for certain things they do. And in fact, those people consistently are trying to shame Christians for what they claim are acts of shaming them. This is a consistent pattern in so many things that those who are making the accusation and are offended are doing the very same thing. Now, those who read the tactics book know that this is a what I call a suicide situation. And by pointing it out, you're using the suicide tactic. You're saying, well, wait a minute, is it going to be no shaming? If it's no shaming, then stop shaming me. If it's no judging, then stop. Why are you judging me? Why are you shaming me if that's the ethic? But that's not the ethic. The ethic is, don't shame me. Don't judge me. I can judge you all I want. And so all that is narcissistic, self-centered, self-serving moralizing. That's all it is. I want to do what I want, but you can't do what you want. Nobody wants anybody else to live that way consistently towards them. They just want it for themselves. They want to be master of their own fate. I remember seeing the movie Bullets Over Broadway or something like that. It was a play made into a film. Trying to think who the playwright is, but he's made a lot of movies like Goodbye Girl and stuff like that. Okay, so Sunshine Boys, et cetera, et cetera. And anyway, this is Bullets Over Broadway. And these were Hollywood types that and one was a producer, and he had a guy who was kind of younger, and he was mentoring him. He says, yes, we are creative people. We make our own morality. We make our own ethics. We live by our own laws. Okay, and then later in the movie, the mentee ends up committing adultery with the mentor's wife, and he gets mad. And then the mentee, Matthew Broderick, I think was the actor, says, wait a minute, I thought we get to make our own rules. And he said, I didn't mean for you, I meant for me. Which is a great statement about how this actually works out in reality, in real time, so to speak. That's the kind of thing that is going on here. So this shaming or whatever, this is just a defensive. This is people taking offense because you're moralizing about their behavior. Now, I think that there are times when it's inappropriate to shame people. And I think it's, as a dad, it's very easy to use shaming as a manipulative, a kind of a passive aggressive manipulative tactic. And it comes very easy to me. And I have to always be on guard against it. When I'm not getting my way, or things aren't right, and I use shaming as a tactic when another tactic, a different way of managing and parenting, would be more effective and wiser. All right. So it isn't that every act of shaming is appropriate. It may be that the act identifies something that is shameful, but shaming it in that moment may not be the best thing to do to deal with the issue or the broader circumstances. But to object to shaming itself, that's the defense of a narcissist, someone filled with self-love. How dare you make me feel bad? And I remember in Oklahoma Wesleyan University, and the president, Piper, I keep thinking John Piper now, but Everett Piper, okay, a very good man and a good president. He's not there anymore. He's on his own. He's written a book. But what happened at the university is they had a chapel, and it was on 1 Corinthians 13, you know, the love chapter. And after having a chapel about love, one of the students complained, wrote a letter to the president, Everett Piper, and said, that chapel made me feel bad because I realized I wasn't loving the way I should, and you shouldn't be shaming me like that, making me feel bad. And Piper famously wrote back to him, I think, an open letter. And his essentially it was, look, this school is not a daycare center. You know, this school is for adults. Now, if you can't take that, go somewhere else. And I think he ended up writing a book titled Not a Daycare Center, and developing the idea of how universities have come to pander to this immaturity of students instead of calling them to rise up to adulthood. And now he's, you know, he does lots of things dealing with this kind of deal. But it's a very, very good point. And it's and I think of it when I hear this particular kind of objection that gets raised.
Yeah, if someone were to say to me, religion is dangerous because it creates guilt and shame, I think my response would be, knowing the truth about right and wrong doesn't create guilt and shame. It reveals guilt and shame. Mm-hmm. And that is the problem they're having. So the question is it true? Is what I'm saying about right and wrong true? Because if it's true, then your guilt is real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. Mm-hmm. If it's not true, then yeah, it's dangerous to make people feel guilty for things they shouldn't be guilty for. That's obvious. But should people feel guilty for the things they are guilty for? I can't imagine anyone saying no to that. So what they're really objecting to is what you're saying is wrong, not the fact that you feel guilt and shame for something that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Think about the comment about danger too. It's dangerous creating guilt and shame. And just think about John Lennon's famous famous song, Imagine, which is one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard, but it's one of the most philosophically and morally ugly things I've ever heard as well. And that's why I'm pained when I listen to it. But he imagines a world where there's no God, there's no heaven, which means there's no ultimate consequences for behavior, no hell below us. And but then he envisions that a world without religion and right and wrong and all of that stuff will produce the brotherhood of man. And his music makes it sound beautiful. You know, I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. But he got murdered. All right. Should somebody be ashamed of murdering John Lennon? And if we're going to remove the shame of murder, then how is it that removing the shame of murder through religion is dangerous? I mean, sorry, how is it that I'm putting this
shaming
wrong.
Someone for murder?
How is it that shaming someone for murder is dangerous when removing the shame of murder is the thing that actually causes the danger? Right? Well, they might say, well, that murderer wasn't living up to John Lennon's ethic. Well, wait a minute. That murderer was doing exactly the kind of thing that is consistent with the entire song, except for the conclusion, the brotherhood of man would result. He's looking at the result of his philosophy, but he's mistaken, Lennon, he was. And the result of his philosophy is what he got. No, I'm not saying he deserved it. I think it's awful. Terribly tragic. But this is what you don't get the brotherhood of man when you remove all of the restraints. You get what John Lennon got and more of it.
It all goes back
and
to
that's a false dangerous.
View. It yes. All goes back to a false view of the human beings. And I look at the second part of his question, and that one just has to forgive oneself to feel better. Okay, but is that our goal to feel better? Or is our goal to actually remove the guilt? And I think to bring this, to help someone understand what you mean by this, put it in terms of guilt that they understand. And Greg, you just did that with John Lennon. One thing you could say is, I saw someone discriminate against a black person, a white guy, and he called him horrible names. It was awful. And some other guy came up and said, that's wrong. My religion says that's wrong, that you should treat human beings with dignity.
Mm-hmm.
Did he do something wrong? Does all that racist person have to do is just forgive himself?
Yeah.
Is that Is that what he needs to do? Or does he need to recognize that, you know, is his goal just to feel better, or is his goal to actually find a way to remove that guilt?
Yeah.
So again, it just comes back to whether or not what Christians are saying about guilt is true. If it's true, it's not dangerous. If it's not true, then it is dangerous.
Forgiveness is a very particular kind of thing. It is where one is who is owed releases somebody else who owes him from that debt. In fact, this is the same kind of metaphor Jesus used. So what does it mean to forgive oneself? Well, I have hurt myself, and so I am going to say to myself, self, you don't owe myself what you self owed. I released you from your debt. Well, it's nonsense. The person who gives forgiveness is not the self who does the wrong. It is the individual who the wrong was done to, another person. That's the self that needs to do the forgiving, and the guilty party needs then to receive the forgiveness. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. So the notion of forgiving myself, I know sometimes that people use it in a much more general sense, like I've just got to acknowledge that, you know, this is over with and I'll let it go, whatever. But strictly speaking, forgiving oneself makes no sense because it is not the self that was wronged by the self. If you have committed a harm, it is to someone else who needs to forgive you, and you get that by asking it. And the one who we've harmed is God first. To you and you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight. Psalm 51.
The only way it makes sense is if your goal is to feel better. If the problem is only that you feel bad, then the way to feel better is to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how they're looking at this. They're looking at this as, I don't like these feelings, these bad feelings, so I just have to let them go. Well, this is where Christianity, this is what we have to offer. We actually have a grounds for covering that sin so that you no longer have to feel that guilt. That is the whole goal. We are offering a real way to feel better, which is that the guilt will be removed. Not just that you won't feel it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Just not feeling it anymore, that doesn't make it go away.
By the way, on a personal note, a few weeks ago, I had a terrible altercation with my daughter. And for my part, I was out of line in the way I expressed myself. It was terrible. Okay, I really lost my temper. And so I felt awful. What did I do? I immediately went to my daughter, who is now kind of trying to lock herself in her bedroom and weeping and prevailing upon her to let me in, and then apologizing to her. And then we had a half-hour conversation that was really productive. But when I walked out, I was glad I did that because that was a step towards reconciliation. But I still felt bad about what I did. It isn't like my seeking reconciliation, which was accomplished, and forgiveness given after confession and repentance, kind of that little cycle going on, made me totally satisfied my emotions at that moment. Oh, now I feel great. Now I did feel better, but I felt better in virtue of the restored relationship. I did not feel better about what I did. I still felt ashamed about what I did. And, you know, became more resolved to guard in the future against that kind of thing. But that didn't make me feel better about my behavior. And forgiving oneself is meant to make you feel better about the bad behavior. You should feel bad about bad behavior. That's healthy. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Well, we're out of time, Greg. That's it for today. Thank you, everyone, for your questions. Please keep sending us those questions on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.